Hello, welcome to Fireside Chats for any new listeners, or welcome back if you've tuned in before. This is our first episode for semester two, so this is going to be really exciting. And our lovely guest today is Juliana Tully, our co-director of media here at Roosevelt Group, but she's also the co-head of the UNA podcast. So I'm very excited to have a fellow podcaster on and interview. Yeah, I'm really excited. So we're just going to jump right into it then. So Juliana, I'm going to have you introduce yourself. And, you know, say what you study, your interests, and the icebreaker that I have for you as we start off every Fireside Chats podcast is, if you had to choose one book to have with you while you were stuck on an island, what book would it be?
Okay. Well, hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited. I love to be on podcasts and do anything podcast related. So yeah, my name is Juliana Tully. I'm originally from Ecuador, but I've also lived in the US for a lot of my life. And I study international relations, and I did modern languages for part of my sub-honors.
Oh, cool.
So I did German and Italian. I love learning languages. I like to travel, and I love to read. But yeah, if I was on an island, I feel like the pragmatic in me is like, I should have like some kind of like survival book.
Yeah.
Because I'm not very outdoorsy, but for more entertainment, I'd probably do something like, I love The Great Gatsby. It's one of those books that every time I reread it, I feel like I'm reading a new book because I always get something else out of it.
Yeah.
Same with like The Picture of Dorian Gray. I think it's just how they're written. I always get something new.
Yeah.
So maybe one of those. I like some series, but I feel like that's cheating because there's like multiple. So yeah, I'd probably say one of those.
I always love that icebreaker question. I just think like what books you're drawn to tells you so much about a person.
It's a good one.
And I'm a fellow lover of reading, so I just had to ask. But also in terms of our shared interest of podcasting, that's how I wanted to start. And I just wanted to ask, what got you into it? How'd you start?
Yeah, so I've always loved listening to podcasts, and I listen to a bunch of different ones. Like, I love the Mel Robbins episodes,
yes,
and like kind of more of like the self-help kind of things, but then I also love like true crime, or I've listened to a few history podcasts, so it's just something that I'm very much interested in as a listener. And I'm very like, I'm an auditory learner, so things just kind of stick with me more when I hear it like that. I love that I can be cooking or going on my walks and also listening to podcasts and stories.
Yes.
So it's always been something I've been interested in as a consumer. And then I had the opportunity to start actually recording it first through United Nations Association. And that was kind of cool because it's like, oh, well, I'll just give it a go. It seems like a fun creative outlet. You know, I've always love to do things like that, be it in acting or singing, and it was just something new to try. And then I really learned that it's fun to make them.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of a creative outlet that you can get through podcasting and really make it your own style, and everyone's way of doing it is completely different. And I think it is a growing medium, especially for news.
Yes.
And so it's kind of like developed with it. So yeah, I think it started off as an interest, and now it's really developed into a sort of passion that I'm extending to a bunch of different areas in my life. So I have my UNA podcast that I co-host, and then I've also recently started up a legal podcast that I'm doing with Institute of Legal History, which is really exciting.
That is so exciting.
It's just, yeah, it's something that I'm interested in. I found a way to merge like the entertainment and passion for it with my more academic endeavors. So.
Yeah, definitely. I had kind of a similar trajectory where I realized I loved it. I loved consuming it, and then took it up from Ward and Louisa, and then it did cultivate into a passion. There's so many aspects of creating a podcast that you don't think of as a listener. It's very easy to view it as just a quick conversation, but it's so curated. It's, you know, developing a relationship with the interviewer versus interviewee, and making sure you have the right, like, comfortable space. And then as a host, like, everybody kind of develops their own personality. So yeah, there's, like, so many aspects to it that I've grown to love as well. And I had no idea about your other podcast that now you're doing. Yeah. Which, so did you just take that up recently?
Yeah, so I'd reached out to the Law Journal because law is something that I'm, like, really, really interested in. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, well, I like podcasting. I kind of want to do more research into anything legal. So I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. let me. And I'd seen, they sent out an email about a collaboration about something else. And I was like, oh, maybe they'd want to do this. Yeah. And they were super, super excited about it. Mm-hmm. And the professor that I'm doing it under also is part mm-hmm. of the Institute of Legal and Constitutional Research. Okay. So it's kind of like they have a podcast, and this is like a subsection of that uh-huh. through the Law Journal. Okay. And we've recorded a few episodes that are going to be released soon, but yay. That one's been really cool because it is something that I've founded. Mm-hmm. So, like, UNA has a very distinctive style that I love to work through. Mm-hmm. This is more focused on, like, anything law. So we're talking about, mm-hmm. we did an episode about law and literature. We analyze, like, how that. Law can be represented in different fictional settings. Mm-hmm. We do stuff about law school admissions. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of, especially St. Andrews students who are looking to go to law school in the U.S., it's a very mm-hmm. confusing program because, you know, we don't have GPAs. And so I wanted to find some outlet where students can kind of get more information. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool because it's kind of open to whatever we want to do. So it's really exciting, but that's a very, very new endeavor that I'm excited to take on.
Yay, well, I'm excited for you, and you have to keep us posted here at Roosevelt and also just the St. Andrews community at large. I feel like everybody would be really excited about that. And that's so true. I feel like in terms of law, I didn't even know. I just know it's a complicated process, but obviously the translation with GPAs, but also just legal systems is surely complicated. So I'm sure other students who are looking to law from St. Andrews are really going to appreciate that. So everybody keep an eye. And kind of stemming from the question of what got you into it, and then clearly now you're expanding, do you think your way is of going about podcasting, or have you gained some new skills? Do you think you've changed in your podcasting career?
I'm sure I have, you know. Probably listen to my first. I started off as editing podcasts for the previous president, and I'm sure my editing skills for one has improved. But no, I mean, I think it's a lot of trial and error. So when I started, I was very interested in podcasts, but I knew nothing about making them. Mm-hmm. And the previous president for UNA, so she was in charge of podcasts, and she found it. Her name was Anna, mm-hmm. and she taught me everything I know about making a podcast. So she taught me how to, you know, use Audacity and edit it and, you know, the kind of questions and how to look for guest speakers. So I do know that a lot of how I go about podcasting is accredited to her. Mm-hmm. But obviously we all have different styles. And I think my style has adapted from, I prefer more conversational rather mm-hmm. than like just pure interviewing, because I think it just is more natural and fun to listen to. Mm-hmm. So I think that's changed a bit. But, you know, it's one of those things. I also think it depends on what the subject matter is. Mm-hmm. You know, my style of podcasting from UNA to the legal side is very different because the subject matter is different. But I think one thing with podcasting that I've really taken on is the fact that you need to be able to adapt to situations. Mm-hmm. And it is, I do think it is an art form. A lot of it comes down to who you're speaking with. Some people that we've had on are very analytical and do want to just have question and answer, and you have to run with it mm-hmm. because they are your guest speaker, and if it doesn't feel collaborative, it's not going to feel natural.
Exactly.
Versus other people, they love the engagement and they mm-hmm. want it to be a conversation and a dialogue, and mm-hmm. then you can run with it. So I think it really is just kind of working with who you are, and I'm very lucky on the UNA side. I have a fantastic team mm-hmm. and they always come up with really, really fun episodes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it is one of those, you just kind of have to go with the flow and see what happens. So I think that adaptability is one thing that I've really grown mm-hmm. The more I've done podcasts.
I agree. Yeah. And that similarly, I'm thinking of my dad in this episode where when I was interviewing him, he's a very conversational guy. He was very excited to do the podcast, but he was also very nervous. And so I remember being like, I wanted I wanted to meet him where he was at. So I decided to take the podcast outside and like make full use of the mini mics. I was like, yep, these are transportable. Let's go outside. We wanted to build a bonfire, but in San Diego, California, that's...
Maybe not.
Maybe not. We have like good days and we have bad days. And it was like peak summer heat. We were like, okay, let's not cause a fire hazard. But, you know, we had a good time with that one. And then, but then that was really different than interviewing Warden Luisa. And Ward loves, like, obviously her favorite space was like the podcast recording space. So we had the more formal mics. And that was an interesting experience. And even just having like the microphone to your face
so close up,
right? Is so different than just having like the mini mic. And it feels a little more casual, more conversational. And that's what I realized I like better. But yeah, there's like so many things.
There's so many factors. Like, it really is one of those. I had to learn, because I'm very type A. I like to have kind of a bit of control over things.
Yes.
And podcast has really forced me to just kind of be like, it's a collaborative work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had the director of UNUSA on, and that was a challenge because she was in Austria.
Oh my gosh.
And it was like, okay, I've never done a digital podcast, like through Zoom. And I'd emailed her not thinking that she would have responded. And then she said yes. And I'm like, I need to have a week.
Gosh.
And I need to figure out how I'm going to get this to work because this is not something I've done.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a lot more interview style, which was not as much what I was used to.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, you know, this is a fantastic speaker. I really want to make sure that I'm doing her justice. And that was a project, having a completely different system to work off of. But it was a great learning curve.
Yeah, and of course.
It is those kinds of things that improve your podcasting.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it was a challenge, now it's like, oh, I can have speakers who aren't local,
mm-hmm.
and it really widens your opportunity and like who you can have on.
Yeah,
versus
exactly.
We had Professor Lang on once, and that mm-hmm. was in his office. He had teas and coffees, and it was so informal. So it really is a different experience every time, but that also makes it so unique. You know,
mm-hmm.
I like journalism and I like to write, but that is normally a similar, like, kind of the same process versus
mm-hmm.
podcasting, where I can kind of, there's a bit more liberty to it, which is nice.
Yeah, it is. It's really nice. And where I was gonna go with that was also being willing to like take that leap of faith, but then also like accepting the fall and accepting the fail. I was wondering if there's ever been a moment where maybe you look back with maybe a little bit of regret, or like that was a learning curve for you in your podcasting style.
I mean, we've had basic issues. Like, one time our audio was, it didn't back up, and so we had like this backup audio that wasn't good, and we had to decide that, you know, we just need to re-record it.
Uh-huh.
So like that, but that those are all very easily fixed solutions,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, it's annoying, you have to re-record, but that's just part of the gig.
Yeah.
More so a learning curve. Honestly, it really is just making it more natural and having
mm-hmm.
to give up that sort of need for it to go exactly as you expect,
mm-hmm.
and really meeting people where they are. So
mm-hmm.
again, especially as a host, being like, oh, so I've had people come on and be like, I'm not great with public speaking, can I just read off my page? And I'm like, if that's what you need to do, then go ahead. Versus people who are like, I might not answer the question you're asking because I just kind of want to speak. And I'm like, okay, we're gonna work with it.
The punches.
I feel like the podcast really grew once I was willing to just be like, that might not be how I was gonna do it, but let's do it that way.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
just kind of allowing myself to adapt to that.
Mm-hmm. And letting the podcast just
be the podcast.
Work its way naturally. No, that's so true. And I love that. And then another question I had in regards to podcasting, this is a little fork in the road, is, so I know you're also really big into acting, singing, and the performative arts, which I think is so cool. You're so multifaceted, because I also want to get into like your journalism. I mean, we know each other from her campus too, so it's nice to see how you like try out all these new skills. But I was wondering, do you think that the performative arts have influenced your interest, and do you think they lend themselves well to podcasting?
Most definitely. I mean, I think, again, you have the things like public speaking. It does become easier. I got so used to having to record on camera and do those kinds of things that it did go naturally to things like podcasting. But
Yeah.
It's become my creative outlet. You know, when I was younger, I did film acting, I did some mm-hmm. modeling, I was on the stage for a bit. I've always had some kind of creative outlet, and I think right now podcasting is taking that role in my life.
Yeah.
I think public speaking was one of them. Mm-hmm. I think also just collaboration, you know, when mm-hmm. you're on set and you're doing sort of film acting, you have 1,000 different creative personalities all uh-huh. wanting to give their opinion, and it does yeah. become hard because the director has one vision and the producer has another, and you need mm-hmm. to balance the fact that it is everyone's project and everyone is so passionate about mm-hmm. the outcome
yeah.
that you have to kind of understand that everyone's opinion's coming from a place of passion and love for what mm-hmm. you're trying to produce. And I think yeah. that energy has really been brought into podcasting, where it's mm-hmm. like, we all want to create something and have a good interview and a good episode,
mm-hmm.
and really taking that into that idea of like, okay, we might not agree on how the episode should be created or what format it should take, but at the mm-hmm. end of the day, I respect that you are doing this because you think this is what listeners would want to listen to,
uh-huh.
and that maybe let's give it a go, or let's try yeah. to merge it, because
mm-hmm.
you might be representing a completely different audience to what I would be representing. And mm-hmm. so I think that is something that I've really brought over. But in general, it's just my creative outlet.
Yeah.
When I'm here, I don't really do much acting or singing or performative arts. Mm-hmm. But I think podcasting is really that way, that I get to still have a little creativity.
A little creativity, yeah. I mean, I would even argue, I dare say, that podcasting in itself is an art. I mean, we've been talking about it for a good deal now. But being able to roll with the punches and taking that leap of faith, like I know for me, when it comes to performative arts, I've always loved like doing, I did acting in school. And I was also a big figure skater. So it was like fun
oh, yeah.
sport mixed with performance performance was really fun for me. But so for me, a lot of that was like, I love the adrenaline and the rush,
yeah.
you know, and the pride that you get, but also like, you know, the humility that also like comes with performance. I think people tend to forget that like actors, singers, dancers, that they can come from a place of humility. They've all had their stumbles and their falls, and they've accepted that.
Yeah.
Because
yeah. I'll say my rejection therapy got so good after oh. filming because like
oh no, I bet
because
oh
like God. But that's exactly how yeah. we taught it, like. My manager would tell us, when I send you out for auditions, mm-hmm. you really have to go into it being like, I will maybe never see this director ever again. Mm-hmm. But that's just the nature of the gig. And that's crossed over into mm-hmm. societies and into when I was applying to schools. Like,
yes.
that was such a lesson I got out of my time in acting, was like, mm-hmm. you might not be right for that project. Like, it has nothing to do with you as a performer or you mm-hmm. as a creative, but it is the fact that mm-hmm. It just might not be a fit. But yeah, yeah, that was probably one of the biggest things that I still take out of my time in that arena, was the fact that
Definitely.
You're gonna get rejected from a lot more things that say yes to you, but that's okay, because you learn mm-hmm. more from the rejections than you do from the yeses.
That's wow, beautiful mic drop moment. Literally, that was so good. That's a perfect way to put it. But I agree, I think I've learned more from the rejections of the past than the successes, it's an exciting feeling of being affirmed, obviously,
right.
but, you know, being rejected, it's a part of life.
It
happens every day, from the littlest things to, you know, your dream job, and you just have to roll with the punches. And I don't know, recently I've been just thinking of the quote, like, que será, será.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And I keep telling myself that, like, what will be, because I'm in the midst of, like, postgraduate applications yeah. as well.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm such a person to just, like, get worked up and things, and I just have to, like, sit back, hear my mother in the back of my head just saying, que será, será, you know, yeah. ponte las pilas, uh-huh. like, just keep
no.
doing your work.
Yeah. Like, I mean, even a more recent example was UNA. The first time I applied for podcasts, I didn't get it. So... because they just didn't have, they were only looking for one person to fill in someone's spot
yeah.
who she just didn't have the time commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get it the first time,
mm-hmm.
Which was a bummer. But then
mm-hmm.
Anna, again, she was like, I'm so sorry, we can't offer it to you right now, mm-hmm. but please come on our summer podcast.
Ooh.
And I was like, okay, that's great. Mm-hmm. Like, I can just do it in the summer. And it is one of those things where it's like, and now I'm getting to head the podcast. Like, your rejections
yes.
aren't necessarily, I hate the quote, but like, it's not rejection, it's redirection. Like, it is, mm-hmm. you can't learn from it. But I'm also saying that as, you know, I'm looking at law schools and it's like,
yes.
We, as much as I say it is, it's still, I mean, it is hard to mm-hmm. get rejected, but it is a part of life and yeah. it's never going to go away.
True. Yeah. But, you know, I feel like we've figured it out, maybe. Hopefully. And now, since I feel like we've covered the basis with podcasting and our shared love of it and what got us into it, I was wondering if you could explain a little bit more, because this was my bad in the beginning too. I just fully said UNA instead of United Nations Association of St. Andrews. So this is going to be kind of a twofold question. I wanted to ask if you could explain what you guys do. I want to say it's probably more than just Model UN. I feel like everybody just kind of has the idea of, like, high schoolers around a Socratic seminar circle right. being like, we are pretending to be yeah. the UN, and I know you guys do a lot more. And then on top of that, what got you into UNA specifically?
Yeah, so funny story, we're not actually UN, like, Model UN affiliate.
Okay.
We do a lot of events with Model UN, and most of our members do both.
Okay.
So, like, the person I headed podcast with last year, I uh-huh. think she's now president of Model UN, I think. Mm-hmm. So, there's a lot of overlap, but UNA yes. is something slightly different. So, we're a sub-branch of UN House Scotland. Pretty much, we are okay. branching between them and then, like, the St. Andrews population. So, mm-hmm. we do a lot of different things. We have a lot of different departments, so there's journalism, there's podcasts, mm-hmm. there's parliamentary one-pagers, we've got mm-hmm. events and fundraisers, so we have a lot of opportunities for people to get involved.
I love that.
I first was aware of UNA because I went to a speaker event mm-hmm. where they brought in a Holocaust survivor, and that was such a fantastic event. I'm like, I really want to get mm-hmm. more involved, and that's when, literally like 2 weeks later, they asked for a podcast. Submission. I was like, ooh, this is perfect. But it is just kind of, we reflect a lot on what the UN is currently doing. Mm-hmm. We try to get people experiences with the UN. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's one of those societies, kind of like Roosevelt, where
yeah.
there's about a million different opportunities of where you could take it. So, mm-hmm. you know, the podcast was a new branch that yeah. Anna had brought, being like, can we do this? And mm-hmm. they were really collaborative with it. Journalism is fairly new. Mm-hmm. So it's, people can bring whatever they want to the table, and as long as they have the drive and the initiative, and it's UN involved, it's like, go for it. So
yeah.
it's cool in the fact that it is both journalism and also, like, events mm-hmm. and also speakers. It's a bit of everything, but that's why I love it.
I love that about it, and I'm sorry that I kind of, like, confused the two. You totally, like, blew my mind, because...
And a lot of people do overlap, mm-hmm. and, I mean, I do think most of the people kind of do both, so it...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah, so...
But that's super cool, and I can see that also being with just the UN in general, like, the actual UN, is there's so much to do and get involved with the UN, and I think people tend to just... think about the Security Council, the big major events and the major resolutions and conventions and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, there's sub-branches, there's, you know, even just rotaries in your local city. So there's so much to do and get involved with the UN that's something I'm passionate about. So that's exciting. And I'm glad you clarified again. And I guess, okay, stemming from the UN, I also wanted to talk about your interest in studying Latin American relations, because I feel like, you know, it's fairly similar topics, but also I wanted to come into this topic because I have, like, similar interests, so I was so excited. One, to see your article, How Will Brazil's New Approach to Oil Production Affect Global Sustainability? That was your first quick take with Roosevelt Group, right?
Yeah,
so how was that? Is Brazil a specific country you're interested in, or?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I come from a very multicultural family.
Mm-hmm.
Latin America is something that's so important to me,
mm-hmm.
Be it Latin Americans' relationship with the world, mm-hmm. North America. But I think also people tend to forget that Latin America isn't just one entity. You
mm-hmm.
have countries in Latin America making foreign policy with one another.
Yes.
And so I'm always trying to highlight the fact that they are their own decision-making and, like, sovereign countries.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where I ran with the Brazil topic.
Mm-hmm.
You know... For better or for worse, They're mm-hmm. starting to rearrange their opinions on climate action. Yeah. But I think the main thing I got out of the article is the fact that this is something that Brazil very much so decided mm-hmm. as its own entity. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of times people expect it to just kind of run with what the United States says it needs to do. Mm-hmm. And again, for better or for worse, it is changing mm-hmm. Its climate agendas and policies. But I think I always just try to paint the picture and really bring into the fact that Latin American countries do still have their mm-hmm. own foreign policies.
Yes.
And a lot of times it has nothing to do with Europe or North America. A lot of times it is mm-hmm. foreign policies towards one another. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, I think it just kind of was, first off, my first quick take, so I was terrified. So I'm like, okay, well, let's do something that you kind of know. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, well, we'll go with Latin America.
Yeah, and I think that's a really fresh approach to, and a very needed approach when it comes to Latin America. And that's how I'm trying to approach what I do in the St. Andrews Economist in the Americas section
yeah.
is try to remind, especially the writers that I have, that you don't, I always find it interesting to take like a country's domestic politics and then kind of slowly, I love starting at the microscopic level and then start like regional and then yeah. international. And I mean, I think both of us as like international relations, like we love kind of piecing together the pieces between domestic policy and international policy like trying to predict what's going to happen next. Like, what is the historical context like between these two countries and all this?
Well, that's the other thing. I feel like a lot of times Latin American history and cultures between mm-hmm. specific countries gets missed. One of my best friends, she lived in the Dominican Republic for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny when we talk about Latin America because completely uh-huh. different experiences.
Definitely.
And like different words and mm-hmm. like different everything. And then I have a friend from Brazil uh-huh. and his experience is totally different.
Yeah.
And although we can find commonality, I think it is important that people start to recognize and understand that like the foreign policy of Ecuador can be completely different from that of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have completely different priorities and there are different things affecting us.
Exactly.
So I think bringing that to kind of the forefront, because like Europe, I think mm-hmm. people kind of understand a little bit more that like France and Germany are completely different states mm-hmm. in the yeah. same way that mm-hmm. Colombia and Ecuador are. But I think mm-hmm. it does, a lot of times South America kind of does get
just clumped together.
So I'm just yeah. trying to bring attention to a few, you know, different policies that are more country focused rather than regional.
Definitely. Yeah. And I mean, so you have personal experience in Ecuador that I kind of wanted to bring to light as well. And I was wondering, I don't know if how long were you in Ecuador? It's obviously a big part of who you are, so I just want you to take free rein with this question.
Yeah, so my mom, born and raised in Ecuador, mm-hmm. and my whole family's from that side has grown up there. My uh-huh. dad's American, so,
yep.
But he did his med school in Ecuador, so my older brother and I were mm-hmm. both born in Quito.
Okay.
And then we moved back to the U.S. when he was starting his residency.
Mm-hmm.
My younger brother's born in Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. so I've grown up back and forth, you mm-hmm. know. I've got dual citizenship.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. It's one of my, whenever I do Never Have I Ever, or not Never Have I Ever, Two Truths and a Lie. That's one of my go-tos. But, you know, and I've had family now move to the U.S. Mm-hmm. from Ecuador. So it's something that I've always grown up with.
Mm-hmm.
For most of my, you know, later life, I've always been in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
So I definitely do have a lot of connections to the States,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of my, you know, my values and everything do stem from Ecuador and the fact that, like, my mom mm-hmm. has raised us in my mom and my dad, a very multicultural household
yeah.
where we appreciate both sides, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, one of my favorite examples is for Christmas,
mm-hmm.
Christmas Eve is our Ecuadorian Christmas, and then mm-hmm. Christmas Day is the American one, so we do, like, all of our like Ecuadorian foods on Christmas
yep.
Eve and those traditions
yep.
and I think that's something that's very important to me
mm-hmm.
and I know that is such a formative part of who I am
mm-hmm.
but I grew up going back and forth quite a bit when mm-hmm. I was really really young. We would do quite a long period of time in Ecuador
mm-hmm.
and then come back and be with my dad mostly when he was still doing his residency
yeah.
and then as we got older and times got busier, now it's probably more like every 2 years,
mm-hmm.
Just because of coordination and stuff. But I'm really close to that side of my life, and it's something that is so important to me, and I love talking about it.
Yes! No, but it's so good. No, that's, again, I relate to you so much because my mom is from Mexico. She's from the other, like, so Tijuana and then the border. So she just went from, like, one border town to the next.
Yeah.
But there's so much that just, like, you feel a part of and kind of so much back and forth going on. We would go see family who are still in TJ. Majority of her family, she's one of 11, a huge Mexican family back in San Diego. They've all kind of eventually moved on over. So now it's more distant relatives. But, yeah, I think I don't know about you, but for me, I just growing up in San Diego where the border is literally right there.
Right.
I just always kind of had this, it wasn't a formal academic interest of international relations, but I always kind of was aware of the movement of people, and it always intrigued me and how like one person's experience, although maybe like our experiences are a little similar, you had more time in Ecuador, which is like super cool.
But I get what you're saying. Like, it's so interesting to me how different cultures can form people. Yeah. Like, so my friend who lived in the Dominican Republic, she's from the U.S. Like, she's been in the U.S. her entire life, but her mom had a job where she'd move around a lot. Mm-hmm. And so it's so funny because she's lived in a Latin American country longer than I have. Mm-hmm. And so it's so funny because, like, I'll be talking to her and I'll be like, I swear I'm talking to one of my cousins.
Yeah.
But even though, like, she's not, like, from a Latin American country, she's lived there longer than I had. Mm-hmm. So I think it is one of those things that people do kind of put into boxes, and I think that we're doing a better job nowadays of kind of realizing that it's not that simple. And, like,
yes,
you know, for me, I've always had sort of a cultural struggle where it's, like, I felt like I had to be one or the other, and I think now I'm kind of learning more so that, like, no, it's okay. Like, I am Latin American, and I love these parts of my culture, and it's so important to me, and I'm never going to pretend like that's not a part of me.
Yeah.
At the same time, in the other way, like, I have grown up in the U.S., and I do have experiences that, like, I know make me from the United States, and that's great, too. Like, I love both of the places that I've grown up, and I love both sides of my family, and it makes me who I am.
Exactly.
And I think appreciating that and appreciating that being Hispanic or being Latin American looks different for multiple people. And that there's not like one stereotype of what it is to be Latin American or what it is to be from the United States or what it is to be, you know, from the UK. Like, especially nowadays with travel, it's so much more complex than that.
Oh, definitely.
100%. Yeah. And I also think that was one of the foremost reasons why I came to the UK was I was given that, like, illustration very young because my dad studied in Ecuador for a bit, and then my mom did a year abroad in the US. So, like, for me, it was always kind of an option.
Yeah.
And my parents were both very, very instrumental in the idea of, like, no, why don't you do it? Like, now's the time. Mm-hmm. Go experience another culture. And I'm so excited to see how, wherever I end up, being in the UK influences me as a person and my opinions. So, definitely. I mean, I think culture is such an interesting conversation. And, like, you could go down rabbit holes about it.
Absolutely.
But no one person is ever going to be the perfect example of what it is to be Latin or what it is to be anything. Like, it's so interesting how everything merges and make you who you are.
Yeah, definitely. And that kind of ties into, you know, all the languages that you know. I'm kind of going to jump a little bit, I guess I'm wondering, where do you see yourself next, especially, you know, as you've learned German now, Italian? Have you studied abroad or gone?
No. So, I mean, I've traveled quite a bit, but it was a debate because I was like, on one hand, I really want to take advantage of the being in this area, and it's so easy to travel and it's so accessible. But I was also like, I'm already abroad, and I really want to, the whole point of my coming to St. Andrews for 4 years rather than just doing a year abroad is I wanted to establish a life somewhere else and really get to do it properly. So I'd gone back and forth about it for a bit, and I ultimately decided that I wasn't going to go on the semester abroad or a summer abroad, but I have a lot of friends are, and that's been great because I've just been able to kind of jump around and travel.
Yeah.
But yeah. So no, I haven't gone abroad and I'll probably not for school, but I've applied to a few internships that are around. So who knows where I'll end up.
Yeah. That's really cool. I mean, I, am a firm believer in learning as many languages as you can. I mean, right now I am only at two. I say this and then my Duolingo bird is like very unhappy with me right now. So like I'm trying to learn French and I couldn't even keep like a 10-day streak.
Yeah.
But I've always looked up to my mom in terms of that because she's just got the magic ear for it. Yeah. Where she's fluent in English, Spanish, and Italian. And then she's learning like Portuguese. She just keeps racking them up, and seeing how much that's opened doors for her.
Yeah.
Now she does global insurance consulting, and she works from home. So it's always a fun dynamic when I'm back for break because I'm like her personal chef, and I'll study with her in her office.
Oh, that's so sweet.
And like one day I'll walk in and she's like, you know, speaking English with her boss, whatever. Yeah. And the next day she's like whipping out a little bit of like French or Portuguese that she knows. And then the next day she's speaking like fluent Italian. And I'm just like, it's so cool to see.
It's fun. I mean, I enjoy learning languages. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like a chore for me. It's one of those things that I find wildly entertaining. And I love seeing differences between like even linguistics in a certain language. So like when I go to Spain, completely different Spanish, or like I can understand Brazilian Portuguese on a certain level, but if I'm in Portugal, it feels completely different. All of a sudden, I'm like, oh wait, maybe I'm not as impressive as I thought I was. But no, I mean, I just think it's really fun, and I've always loved to travel, and part of why I love traveling is I love learning about new cultures, so the foods and the history and the language. I think it's really fun to get to go to a country and be like, please let me try speaking with you. So it's something, and obviously it is good for work too, and it will open a lot of doors for me, but it's one of those things that it's never really been something just about getting into the door. A lot of it has just been personally. I, especially seeing my parents speak two languages, it's always funny to me because when we were younger, we forgot a lot of our Spanish when we moved to the US because you're just so surrounded by English. And that was the motivation to relearn it was when my parents were talking about something they didn't want us to know. They wouldn't go to a new room. They would just start speaking in Spanish. Mm-hmm. And so my brothers and I were like, oh, but we need to learn it because I need to know what they're saying about. And so it was such a win when we found out that they couldn't do that anymore because they knew that we knew it.
Yeah.
So it's just always been something that I've been exposed to. And so I think that's probably why I enjoy it so much. But I think it's not for everyone because it is very tedious and just memorization I think it's fun.
No, I agree with you, and I think the reason I think a lot of people do find it tedious is because they just kind of look back on maybe they had a poor teacher or just more so the like structured classes, or like people find that redundant. But I know at least for me, how I came to learn Spanish was my mom would try to speak to me in Spanish, you know, her side of the family tried to speak to me in Spanish when I was a baby, and then my dad would be speaking to me in English, and then she was just kind of like, you know, shot in the dark, which one is she going to pick up first? Yeah. For my sister, when she did that with my sister, it was Spanish. For me, it was English.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so then I was just kind of like immersed in it, but like I wasn't really trying because I was like a kid, I wasn't as interested.
Yeah, I mean,
but for me, how I really started getting into it was just listening to music and finding the right TV shows that I was interested in, the books.
I'm big on TV shows to teach you a language.
Oh, yeah. So, and, you know, turning on the... I keep the captions in Spanish or like in...
Yeah.
So then I can like read and listen at the same time.
No, I think that's a great way to do it. I also, something that I love to do when I travel, and it's kind of like, instead of me collecting postcards, I like to collect books. So like yeah. every country I go to, sometimes it doesn't make sense for me because I don't speak French. Mm-hmm. But I found these beautiful copies of Les Mis, and it's one of my favorite Ooh. Books. And I'm like, I need it. I'll learn it one day.
Girl, that's a heavy book to bring back from France.
Yeah, it was bad. But oh my goodness. No, my friends always laugh because I have, it's a heavy souvenir.
Oh, yeah.
And when I'm packing my carry-on, they're like, it's going to be overweight. I'm like, no, it'll be fine.
I'll figure it out.
I'm like sitting on my suitcase. No, but I think non-traditional ways to learn language, I think, is always better. So,
for sure,
watching your favorite shows in Spanish, or like, I mean, Spanish has a ton of different ones, like La Casa de Papel, Elite, like those are some of the shows that are my favorite, regardless of the fact that they help me learn Spanish. Mm-hmm. Reading books, I've started to, instead of buying even just like pop culture books that I'd mm-hmm. want to read in English, like things like Fourth Wing, mm-hmm. maybe don't buy it in English, maybe buy it in Italian.
Yeah.
And do it that way. And it's so much easier because you're looking at words that you need in the everyday.
Uh-huh.
And you don't even realize that you're learning it because it's just fun. It's fun. Watching movies. It's things that you like to do regardless.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also, like, I found learning to let go, and it kind of stems back again to, like, the performative arts and podcasting and interviewing. Like, being able to take that leap of faith and just, like, throw yourself into the environment and just accepting the awkward conversations or accepting the miscommunications that will happen. But you know, when you were little, that happened when you're learning English, and you just pick up and move on, and that's how you learn. And sometimes, like, I have to remember that it's kind of like rejection therapy as well.
I mean, my mom is so good about it. She's pretty good with Portuguese because it's similar enough where she can understand most mm-hmm. of it. And then we went to Portugal and she just learned for that trip.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing her, and like, I always get a little nervous when I tell uh-huh. someone, like, oh, you know, we went to Switzerland, and I was speaking to some Swiss Germans, and they're like, oh, like, let's speak in German. And I'm like, okay. But like, it's not, like, I forget the cases, and they go, it doesn't matter. Let's just speak.
Yeah.
And when I just spoke, because I'm like, oh, well, now I have to, they were so nice about it. They're like, we understand what you're trying to say. Your grammar is not perfect, but that's not the point. My mom, she doesn't even get the fear of it. She's just like, okay, someone says, oh yeah, like, I'm Portuguese, and she'll just start speaking before they even, and it doesn't mm-hmm. faze her. And I think, mm-hmm. I do think part of it is, I mean, obviously she grew up more in South America, and when mm-hmm. she came to the US, it was like, that's just what I have to do.
Yep.
But I do try to be a little bit more like her on that front, because I get nervous.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, you're gonna...
I get so scared.
You're gonna laugh because I said the wrong tense. But I also think that people appreciate it, because it is a respect to the culture. I think I'm a big mm-hmm. advocate for, if you go to a foreign country, please try to at least learn basic phrases in the language, because it's a respect thing. And so, mm-hmm. I don't know, I like to think that people mm-hmm. appreciate it, but that's something I need to work on. I need to get better at just trying it and just speaking it.
Or at least, like, in my brain, too, I think, like, oh, if it was the other way around, if somebody came up to me and was trying to communicate to me, or they're trying to learn English, like, of course, I'd be more than happy to help them and just have a conversation with them. I would never, like, be disparaging or patronizing. Yeah. So you have to remember, I think, sometimes like, you're also talking to another human being, and they're going to be appreciative that you're trying.
Exactly.
And, yeah, I mean, I guess, I don't know, this is where we could, I guess, take our conversation wherever you like. I mean, I know you mentioned your interest in law and your recent Quick Take article. This was really recent.
Yeah, it came out, I think, like 2 days ago.
Yeah. It's the current trends in privacy law, how growing legal initiatives affect data collection. And I was wondering, is this a specific area in law that you're interested in, is privacy law, or just...
Actually, no. I mean... So I've got areas that I'm really, really passionate about. So, like, mm-hmm. I would love to go into human rights law. Mm-hmm. Something that really is important to me is possibly representing women in conflict zones mm-hmm. who have been victims of the usage of, like, sexual violence in warfare. Mm-hmm. That is something that really drove me to mm-hmm. my passion in law and being mm-hmm. a lawyer. So, I mean, that's really where I want my career to end up.
Yeah.
I'm also very passionate about immigration law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something that's very, very personal to me. And I think that we need more lawyers who are willing to represent immigrants and people that are trying to move around and are really making an effort. I also think that there needs to be more legislation and trying to reform the immigration system. So, mm-hmm. those are the two areas of law that have really sparked my interest. But
yes.
I also love law. Mm-hmm. It's something that I find so incredibly fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I've had experience. I've been lucky. I've had a very unique approach to law because mm-hmm. I've worked on the sort of like legislative side. I interned with my local representative for the past two years. And yeah, I mean, I love it. I get to help write legislation that he brings to the House. I mm-hmm. currently have a bill that's hopefully going to get passed that I've got to help write. And so I've seen that side of the law, but I've also mm-hmm. seen kind of more from the lawyer side. I've worked with a local law company. I'm also currently interning for Sahil, which is like a Latin American international organization that focuses on law. And I've seen that side. And so my passion, although I do have areas that obviously I'm a little bit more focused on, I have a passion for law and for the delicacy and like respect for it. So mm-hmm. I just like learning about law. So mm-hmm. I saw something, I was just reading the news about privacy law and how AI is going to be affecting law. And I'm like, that seems interesting. We'll write about that. Because mm-hmm. I also know that a lot of people say once you go to law school, you have a completely different opinion about what you want to study and where you want to go with it. Uh-huh. So I've got a very open mind.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was like, this seems cool. This is interesting.
Yeah,
we'll go with that.
For sure. And I think what intrigued me about the article was just how law is evolving. I mean, how every field is evolving with AI right now. But just because I always viewed law as like, you know, the big dusty book
right.
that they slam on the table and they're like, this is Article 50 million of Code A or yep. something. And it's a subject kind of steeped in institutional tradition. But it yeah. is, and it's constantly evolving, and it's always being reshaped, being contested, being drafted up over and over again. And I thought that was like a cool aspect to yeah. your article with AI.
I mean, I completely agree with you. I think everyone, even I still picture, when you think of law, you picture old libraries and old mm-hmm. books and people in the wigs and like, but it, yeah. no, but it is one of those things where it's law has always been something around. Like mm-hmm. it's so historical mm-hmm. and, you know, the professor I'm working with for the other podcast, we've talked mm-hmm. about like old constitutionalism and how it differs from the legal system today. But yes, at the same time, so much of what we do today still has to do with law. Mm-hmm. Every law is something that it transcends discipline. So you mm-hmm. have people that are interested in medical law and mm-hmm. like, obviously you've got corporate law. And yeah. so there's so many areas that it can go to, but it's mm-hmm. so fundamental to how we organize and how we participate mm-hmm. in a society, which yeah. I find like incredible.
Yeah.
And it's so delicate mm-hmm. and it's, like, it's almost beautiful. Like, when you read it, it sounds so
no, but there's like
idealistic. But it yeah. is really cool to read and to understand how it all interworks and how this law affects this law and how, well, you can't really say that because there's a code here. And then take away the actual, like, written law. Then you go to, like, well, this court case actually disrupts the point that you're making because we've already shown that in practice that's not how the law is applied. Uh-huh. And so it's just so much going on at once. And it's like the internship that I did over the summer, a lot of what I was doing was researching for this attorney. And it was like, it felt like an investigation, a puzzle. It was like, oh, I have to yeah. figure out how to prove this. Mm-hmm. These court cases, and I do mooting, and it's very similar. It's like, uh-huh. how can we collect and find the data that we need that mm-hmm. like, it's never black and white. So how am I gonna
yeah.
obviously see what the other side is looking at and like, use it and also look uh-huh. at it's just it's so much going on at once and I love it. But I mean yeah you so can cool. you can run in so many different directions. So I've looked into privacy law, I've looked into multicultural law mm-hmm. and how like international law. I did a class last year in international law or last semester mm-hmm. and it was so interesting being like
yeah.
international law has no overarching authority yet we still use it. But yeah. there's no jail, there's no mm-hmm. how does it function? And that is so different from domestic mm-hmm. legal systems.
Yeah.
And looking at how, you know, different cultures that have to enter into agreements, how do they formulate legal agreements when both countries have completely different constitutions and completely different systems? Mm-hmm. It is so fascinating to me.
Yeah. I mean, the way you put it, like, and you word it itself, it just sounds so beautiful and expansive and just like, oh my gosh, we could go into a whole other podcast
you
about
really could.
Law. But yeah, I think that's a different way to view law that I think more people should be open to thinking about. So I did want to touch on our also shared work in Roosevelt Group, which, I mean, we touched on your articles, which were lovely and amazing. But I was wondering if you wanted to talk a little bit about your digital media work. I mean, you're the head here at Roosevelt Group and for our media. And I was wondering, what are your goals for Roosevelt Group this semester?
Yeah, so I think one thing that was really important to me with Roosevelt is engagement. Mm-hmm. And I think not as much, I mean, like we've said, mm-hmm. there are so many opportunities to be engaged with Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're getting to use your podcasting and your love for podcasting Yay. Through Roosevelt. And, like, there are journalism, but there's different kinds of journalism. You can mm-hmm. do the Nouvelles, or if you want to do the quick takes. Mm-hmm. And then even there, you can engage with broad topics that are really passionate to you. That's mm-hmm. something I love about Roosevelt, mm-hmm. is because it's your oyster. You can do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And it's such a supportive group of individuals who are interested in a variety of topics. Mm-hmm. But the whole point is we all just want to be able to engage with them and share them.
Yeah.
And I think one thing is, it's twofold, because I want more people to understand how they can get involved mm-hmm. and make the most of their time in Roosevelt, because mm-hmm. It's a group that gives you so many opportunities. You know, I love the fact that I can write about a multitude of topics and that they mm-hmm. help me, you know, it's published and it's digitalized and I can mm-hmm. share it with people. And that's an outlet that I get to work with, and getting to film this podcast. It's super exciting. And I think more people should kind of be aware of how they can make the most of their time in Roosevelt mm-hmm. Group. I also think making people outside aware mm-hmm. of what we do and giving more exposure. So mm-hmm. more exposure to the podcast and get more mm-hmm. listeners in. I want, and I know, like, you put so much energy into the podcast. More people should hear it and get, but I think a lot of
it a little more.
Yeah, but I think a lot of it is people don't know where to find it, or people might not be mm-hmm. reminded of it. So really trying to work on engagement. Same with, like, Nouvelles. Like, I know the editors mm-hmm. and the writers put so much effort into mm-hmm. creating this. Yeah. I really want it to be shared and, like, mm-hmm. given the attention that, like, it deserves, because it Definitely. Is, like, people are so passionate about the work that they do. Mm-hmm. I think that making sure that the work and the passion that they show gets shared with the general public and the university. Yes. So I think that's one thing I really am trying to work on, especially this semester, because I think, you know, last semester is a lot about getting the ball rolling, getting people comfortable about being in Roosevelt. A lot of mm-hmm. what we publish and we the output comes in this semester, and really mm-hmm. trying to work with, I think we have a fantastic committee this mm-hmm. year, and really working, it's so great. And really, I think, really working with everyone and making sure that people get exposed to so much, because mm-hmm. there's so much that Roosevelt does. I think a lot of people think it's just the quick takes, but it's mm-hmm. it's a lot more than that. And mm-hmm. again, Definitely. Like, we also bring in amazing speakers, making sure that they get the attention we need. So mm-hmm. I don't know, just kind of working with all the different groups and making sure that people are aware of the hard work that all of our members put in.
Definitely. Awareness is so important. And I love the way that you put it, because I guess I didn't even view, like, your role as media as you have this kind of macro lens of everything that we do at Roosevelt Group. And I thought that's such an interesting take, because you do get a little bits of, like, everything, and you see the passion that's in every little niche that makes us Roosevelt Group. And that's something I'm, like, also, I'm passionate about, like, expressing other people's passions, like, in Roosevelt Group, because I think people overlook that, and the quick takes are kind of, like, the tip of the iceberg, or people just go, oh, it's a think tank group, but what exactly is a think tank? You're like, wait, we actually do so much.
I think that's something that you and I has kind of, because I've been on the other side, so, like, mm-hmm. as a podcast, we have mm-hmm. to go through publicity to be like, hey, can you output our podcast? And UNA is fantastic mm-hmm. about it. You know, mm-hmm. we've gotten such good response mm-hmm. and really good listener count because their publicity mm-hmm. team is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I think I really wanted to make sure to encompass that in Roosevelt, because I know from that end, like, you put so much effort into your work, and you just want to share it with people.
Yeah.
And that's my job as media, is to be like, I'm going to work as hard as I can to make sure that people are seeing this. Mm-hmm. I'll update the website. I'll update the Instagram. Like, I want all of your hard work to be showcased. Aww. And I think, and that's, I mean, it's good for Roosevelt too, because it shows people that, like, we are a society that we put out a lot. Like, as, like, so we get a lot of writers and we get a lot of quick takes that people are invested in the society, and it's good for the society for people to see that. Mm-hmm. And it's also good on the individual level. Like, I know how long you spent on writing this. I want people to read it. And so, I think that's, and that's something very unique to the media team, and something that, like, I can really work on, because I get to write quick takes, and I love that side of Roosevelt, but I also love getting to kind of bridge all of the different subsections and be like, let's show Roosevelt in its best foot forward, and how much we really get to do, and the participation we get from our group and our members.
I love that, and I love, like, the individual approach, like, again, that lens that you have to it, because I think because we're a group and a collective, people view us as, like, a group and a collective. But I'll constantly have to remind people, like, no, we have so many creatives on our team. We have so many people who are interested in different facets of everything, from business to foreign affairs to performative arts. Like, everybody is their own person in the group as well. And a person who has such niche interests and bring their own, you know, personalities to the table. Like, the Roosevelt Group we have personalities. Yeah. Like, we're not just a think tank. I think it's a killer word. It's a necessary word.
It is. Because you need to be able to identify the society as something. But it is unique in the fact, and I love that you brought that up. Because, you know, you and I, it's we do get people that are not IR or history, but it is very much, like, UN focused, and, like, law society. It's very law focused. Roosevelt is so unique in the fact that you have everybody, and it's just full of very, I think, academically curious people, and people that want to have a voice and have opinions that they want to express. And I love that, because, I mean, even at our socials, I've talked to people who are super interested in, like, engineering and, like, that sort of thing, and they'll be talking to you about something that I know nothing about, and I can't even pretend to know anything about.
Yeah.
But I love their passion for it, and I love passionate people, and hearing different people's interest. And that's the beauty of Roosevelt, is it's not, you know, although we do get a lot of people that are very, like, IR focused or you know, history or science, it is great in the fact that you're not just exposed to the same kind of people.
Yeah. Exactly.
And although we all are very motivated and academic students, the breadth of what we report on and what we talk about is limitless, which I think is great, because it's so diverse and you get so many different opinions. Yeah. And I think that's what you really need in the publishment and in, like, a think tank.
Yeah, definitely. And I see that in the thread, like, throughout this podcast, is this theme of opening, expanding your horizons and being open to new cultures, new subjects. Everything is a lot bigger than what it seems on paper. Or
I mean, it really is. I have made some fantastic friends from Roosevelt, and I've learned so much from Roosevelt, and, like, obviously in the speaker events you learn, it lends itself for you to be learning new things, but I've learned so much just from our socials, and just from getting to talk to people about their experiences, and, like, a lot of them, even, like, some of our alumni who've been like, hey, I'm in law school, like, do you need help with this? And, like, I'm like, yes, thank you. And and getting to talk to people who are from different cultures and different perspectives, and about everything. I've learned so much as a member, and I think that is something so unique to Roosevelt, because it's not exclusive. We love personality, and we love people getting to express their own voice, even if I might not agree with what you're saying. I think it's a great place for people to bring in different opinions in a very, very respectful and organized way.
Yes. Especially to keep a think tank thinking, literally. You got to be open to having conversations and, you know, tapping into subjects maybe you never thought you would tap into before.
Right.
And write a quick take about it, or just talk about it at the pub. It's a fun environment to be around, and I'm
can't stop you know.
I know we can't stop, but unfortunately, with the allotted time, we don't want to start dozing off our listeners, so we can just leave it at that. I think. Is there anything else you'd like to bring up?
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming on. I had so much fun, and I was so excited to have a fellow podcaster on. I was like,
yeah,
I get to interview somebody with a similar interest, but at the same time, I mean, you've got your law thing going for you. I support you. I'm so excited for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you've changed my ideas on law just in this podcast alone. So I'll just leave it at that. Thank you so much for coming on. I had so much fun with you.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll leave it at that.
Perfect.
Bye.